Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Saturday morning Dhamma class at Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, from April 29, 2017. My Dhamma talk and our Sangha discussion is on the Samadhi Sutta, where the Buddha teaches the purpose of Shamatha Vipassana meditation to develop profound concentration. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. Thank you. Peace. Today's talk is on the Samadhi Sutta, where the Buddha teaches the purpose of meditation is to deepen concentration. Samadhi is often translated to mean concentration, and perhaps a better definition in the context is a lack of distraction, because that's really the purpose. It's saying the same thing, but in the context of the Dhamma, it's really the distraction caused by the preoccupation with dukkha that creates all the stress in our lives and creates a life that is always focused outside of ourselves and trying to create the conditions, the external conditions of our own happiness and peace, rather than create the internal conditions that will last. The Samadhi Sutta, the purpose and practice of concentration, shows the proper use of Shamatha Vipassana meditation within the broader framework of the Eightfold Path. I got to say something here. When I say Shamatha Vipassana, I say Shamatha. And somebody, it was kind of a, I could tell it was a rather upset email. They say, I listen to your talks and you keep saying Shamatha. Now I can't remember how I say it. And the proper pronunciation is Shamatha. And I just can't say it that way. Moira pointed out to me years ago that you're not saying that word the way it's usually pronouncing it.
Just say it properly again.
Shamatha?
Wait a minute. Shamatha Vipassana. Shamatha, with the emphasis on the ma, rather than just kind of a flat
Shamatha.
Word. Yeah.
That's
rather than.
Ta.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, I have a very conditioned mind to say it one way, and I'm not giving it up. So. The word meditation. I just lost my page now. The word meditation in modern Buddhist practice has many applications. It is often used as contemplation or analysis. In other words, pick a topic and contemplate that. I talked about the meditation on the charnel grounds Thursday night, which really isn't a meditation. It's just a contemplation of the human body and how it decomposes, and we shouldn't be so enamored with the body because look what happens to it. It's really more a teaching on the meditation on eternal grounds is more a teaching on impermanence rather than a meditation practice. Topics popular for contemplation or analysis are suffering, emptiness, Buddha nature, conditionality, and many others. This overemphasizes simple and direct teachings leading to distraction by analysis. And all of those things that I just talked about, those topics, are what is developed through the Eightfold Path, including a meditation practice, but it's the framework of the Eightfold Path that lets us understand the nature of suffering or the true meaning of emptiness, etc. It's not just a meditation practice where we figure these things out. And the reason why that's not possible is because we have a conditioned mind. That's why the Buddha taught an Eightfold Path and not just meditation. Often, too, meditation is used to describe a process of deity visualization and worship. And that's mostly true in the Tibetan schools, which I was a part of for many years. You create these very intricate visualizations of the Buddha or different deities that you're hoping will assist your development, and even very, very, I mean, it's almost mind-bending kind of meditations on creation that I just always got lost in. And again, it's not something, I'm not putting it down, it's just not something that the Buddha taught. Still, other applications of meditation are used to hopefully develop a quality of mind of nothingness where an inherent Buddha nature is realized. And that's another modern Buddhist school that does that. What you're hoping to achieve is to have this experience of nothingness, and it's in that nothingness that your own Buddha nature will arise once you clear all the other thoughts out of your mind. And again, I tried it. It didn't work. And it's just not something that the Buddha taught. The Buddha taught shamatha vipassana meditation as one factor of the Eightfold Path for the purpose of developing the concentration necessary to support the refined mindfulness of the other seven factors of the path. At its most profound and skillful usefulness, it is concentration developed within the framework of the Eightfold Path that directly brings cessation of all confusion, deluded thinking, and unsatisfactory experiences. This is the Samadhi Sutta. The Buddha addresses those gathered. Friends, there are four qualities that are developed from concentration. Excuse me. Concentration, when developed and practiced, leads to developing peace and calm here and now, developing useful knowledge and true vision, developing refined mindfulness and attentiveness. In both of those words, true mindfulness and attentiveness means that we develop the ability to know what is most important to hold in mind, what we should put our attention on, not just on trying to gain insight into impermanent phenomena, but to gain insight into the Dhamma, into the Eightfold Path. Developing the cessation of craving, aversion, and delusion. So again, that's all in the context of the Eightfold Path. And the ultimate purpose, when the Buddha described an awakened, fully mature human being, he described their mind as calm, and it was unbound and released from clinging, empty of clinging. And that's something we'll develop on the retreat too, and it's more, I just published another book called Becoming Buddha, and it's more developed in that than I can get into right here. The Buddha continues, how does the development of concentration lead to peace and calm here and now? When properly engaged in shamatha vipassana meditation, one is withdrawn from sensuality and unskillful mental qualities. They enter and remain in the first jhana, delight and pleasure born of withdrawal, and accompanied by focus, thought, and insight. So I know I've talked about the jhanas, but just to make it clear what I'm talking about today, the jhanas are four levels of meditative absorption, and they're described by the Buddha often throughout his teachings. The reason why this clarity needed is that the jhanas have now become this very mystical type of meditative achievement, rather than simply meditative absorption. When the Buddha taught the jhanas, and I'll go over the other three in a minute, they were simply to be recognized that. These are meditative states that we achieve through this meditation practice. They're not something that we should chase after, and they're not nearly unattainable as they're often portrayed. Even the fourth jhana, which is a mind resting in equanimity, of course that's an awakened mind, but nearly every meditation session that we have, if we're using the proper method, in the simple method, we will have an experience, even if it's just for a brief moment, of all four jhanas. So let me continue. As concentration deepens further, they enter and remain in the second jhana. Focused thoughts and insights still. Delight and pleasure born of composure and inner assurance arises. As concentration deepens further, they enter and remain in the third jhana. Delight and pleasure and the perception of pleasure and pain disappear. Now, all the Buddha is really describing is we're starting to deepen our concentration and are having the experience of a momentarily at least, non-reactive mind. We're doing what we should be doing in meditation. And again, the reason why the Buddha taught this is just so we can recognize it and acknowledge that, we're gaining some benefit from this. There's a few articles on the website that go into more detail on the jhanas too. And I teach it every now and then here. As concentration deepens further, they enter and remain in the fourth jhana. Mindful equanimity prevails. Greed and aversion disappear. This is the development of concentration that brings peace and calm here and now. And how does the development of concentration lead to developing useful knowledge and true vision? Another word for true vision is right view. As concentration deepens, distractions subside. Even the passing from day to night and night to day is free of disturbance. The mind, in other words, we're not putting any specialness on during the day. It's not that the sun is shining or the sun has set. There's no distinction moment by moment of what's occurring in our life. A mind of equanimity. It doesn't matter what's occurring. It doesn't matter where we are in our life. Our mind is at peace. The mind is bright and spacious. This is the development of concentration that brings useful knowledge and true vision. When the Buddha talks about himself prior to his awakening experience, he often remarked that the quality of his mind was a confining space. And here he's talking about it's spacious. And many of us describe that feeling, even if it's early in our meditation practices, our mind just feels more spacious. And it really is. Our minds aren't so filled with thoughts of one thought following another thought following another thought. Concentration is a spacious mind. It's a relaxed mind. It's a mind of equanimity. And how does the development of concentration lead to developing refined mindfulness and attentiveness? As concentration deepens, the impermanence of feelings is understood. In other words, we don't react to everything that's occurring in our life. Our minds are at peace. And in this sense, feelings means not just a physical feeling or an emotional feeling. It means any disturbance in the mind. As concentration deepens, the impermanence of perceptions is understood. As concentration deepens, the impermanence of thoughts is understood. This is the development of concentration that brings refined mindfulness and attentiveness. And how does the development of concentration lead to developing the cessation of craving, aversion, and delusion? As concentration deepens, one remains attentive to the arising and passing away of the five clinging aggregates, form, feeling, perceptions, mental fabrications, and the resulting consciousness. The five clinging aggregates are simply the personal experience of suffering. It's just the way that the Buddha described that. This is the development of concentration that brings the cessation of craving, aversion, and delusion, which is the whole point of the Dhamma. Friends, these are the four qualities that are developed from concentration. Those who understand the three marks of existence, for whom there are no disturbances, free of desire, at peace, this one has abandoned confusion, delusion, and disappointment. That's the end of the sutta. The Samadhi Sutta teaches the proper use of meditation and how the concentration developed through Shamatha Vipassana meditation directly addresses developing understanding of Four Noble Truths, the integration of the Eightfold Path, and cessation of greed, aversion, and deluded thinking. So that last mention that the Buddha said that the development of the understanding of the three marks of existence, the three marks of existence are another main focus. In fact, it's the primary focus of the entire Dhamma, is to recognize the impermanent nature of all things. And why is that so important? It's because once we recognize the impermanence of all things, we'll cease attaching ourselves to it, which leads to the second mark of existence, the anatta, the not-self characteristic. And what the Buddha is saying and using that term is that the views that we hold of ourselves, because they are clinging to external events and objects and views and ideas, do not constitute a self. They're not a self, they're anatta. And it's in the misunderstanding, in the clinging integration, the right word, between not self and the impermanent nature of all things, that dukkha arises in our life, the three marks of existence. The reason why we use the word marks, I can't think of the Pali word, doesn't really matter, but it refers to that every human being, as a consequence of having a life, we carry this mark. We are marked by this experience of impermanence, not self, a misunderstanding of self, and resulting dukkha. Everybody has it. And the whole point of the Eightfold Path is to recognize how we've created that in our own experience, in our lives, and that personal experience is called the five clinging aggregates. The reason why that last part is important is if you look at form, feeling, perceptions, mental fabrications, and the resulting thinking, consciousness, all of those are impermanent. And if they're impermanent, they cannot constitute a self. Let go of them. Why create identities over things that we know are inherently impermanent? Lao Tzu, the great Chinese master, said that once you understand the impermanence of all things, you'll let go of everything. Why would we hold on to anything? Why would I want to create an identity over something that I know is impermanent, that I know has no substance? And yet, every time I get a bigger house, I'm a better person. Every time I get a newer or faster car, I'm a little bit more cool than I was yesterday. Every time. I'm always building an identity throughout my life until I recognize what a foolish way to live a life. And that doesn't mean that there's nothing wrong with having a big house or a fast car if you like to go fast. But it's creating an identity over these things that we acquire. And, of course, I'm using rather grand examples. But it's really in the subtle things that we create identities over that cause the most difficulty and distraction in our lives, that we have the most difficulty letting go of. The entire Dhamma, the whole purpose of concentration, is to recognize this whole process that we've engaged in and that we're locked into, so that we can interrupt it and change it into a more realistical and meaningful way of looking at the life, at our lives. So that's the purpose of the Dhamma. Any questions about this talk of the Samadhi Sutta? You all understand that the purpose of meditation in the Buddhist practice, in the Buddhist Dhamma, is for deepening concentration, right? Okay, so we'll start with Jen. Jen, how's your practice? And any questions or comments?
I feel pretty well focused lately. I think whatever I went through in the last 2 months of work and stress and kind of getting caught up in things really helped me refocus on the practice.
Mm.
And not just going through the motions, but really doing it right in the day-to-day and really checking back in.
Yeah.
And something that you said about in the everyday, from day-to-day activities, just kind of letting go of thoughts and returning your mindfulness to not necessarily your breath, but just what's happening in or with you at this moment.
Yeah.
And you know, that's just how that just quiets your mind and really just helps you be skillful.
Yeah.
And then just, you know, then it's just the stress that's happening, you know, which never stops. Just is, you know, easier to navigate.
Yeah.
And I think also lately I've noticed, because it seems, you know, that I have a lot of friends. I wouldn't say super close people, but like close enough people that are going through some significant soft stress, you know, kind of watching them spin their wheels, and you know, in the past maybe that would be frustrating or difficult to watch. Now I just have this compassion because I can see that they don't have that concentration. They don't have that ability to really see clearly what's happening. And that allows me to stay with them, I think, more and be, you know, be present. And mostly just not get stressed out by them, myself.
What you're describing is developing profound right view. You understand, which is understanding the nature of suffering at a profound level, and not contributing to yours or other people anymore. Through, relates right to the sutta, through deepening concentration, you're able to maintain the refined mindfulness of the Eightfold Path. You see things clearly. You stop reacting. Our minds remain calm. It really is that simple and direct, too. So, thank you. Kevin, good to see you this morning.
So I've been meditating deeply, I think, in the past week and weeks, and I think my concentration is getting deeper. It's hard to speak that, like when I feel it feels really good. I don't want to be boastful about it or think that I'm progressing too far, but I have, you know, when I read about the jhanas, it's sort of, I think I have almost touched that.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that in my life I've come to this so that I can continue to meditate and concentrate and deepen. Break the spell or something. But it's just, I'm very grateful. Grateful to your teaching.
Thank you, Kevin. And we're all grateful that these, I mean, it's really, it's one of the most remarkable things to me in my life that these teachings are still here and they still apply, they still work. And that's why they're called noble truths. And it's one of the reasons why the Buddha taught the jhanas is so that we can recognize the deepening levels of our meditative absorption, that it's working. And you're also very wise to realize that it's easy to create another identity over being the world's greatest meditator, and you're not, because you're developing it within the proper framework. Ultimately, you realize that this is just extraordinary ordinariness. It really, it's about just living a human life the way it's meant to be lived, with a mind of peace and calm, understanding what it means to be a human being. Like Jen said, dukkha will occur. You know? And when it occurs, I'll have an appropriate response. I don't have to react. I don't have to lose my mind, mindlessness. So, thank you. Mary, good morning. Good to see you.
Good to be here. The jhanas are something, if I'm understanding correctly, that they're just going to come as you meditate.
That's the best way to look at it.
Okay, they are levels or states of meditation that as you meditate, you go through, even for a split second, but you do get there.
Yes.
And then sometimes I feel like I am getting somewhere, but again, it doesn't last long.
Yeah.
And most of the time I find, well, that I have to focus on concentrating on my breathing, which is what it's all about, which is probably good, instead of, you know, my mind wandering with it or not.
Yeah.
Again, for me, the mornings are more difficult. I'm much better at concentrating in the evenings. I don't know if it's because I've had all day to work things through, or remind, even as I'm working on something during the day, I remind myself, this is what you're doing.
That's outstanding.
Yeah.
That alone, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it enables you to get something done, and whatever it was you were thinking about, it's still going to be there, and you'll get done later.
Yeah.
You know, to everything has its own time.
Yeah.
And I have to keep reminding myself about the impermanence, because, I mean, it's just so true. And it is helpful to remember that everything is impermanent.
Yeah. And I think that, or I don't think, I know, because I've had that experience, it makes what's occurring in my life now much more meaningful, but not in a clinging, grasping way.
Yeah.
It's, I know this is, whatever this is, I mean, it could be the brand new fast Ferrari.
Mm-hmm.
Even that's impermanent.
Yeah.
Again, it's a silly example. But more important is the mundane aspects of life. You know, just to be in life is its own reward. And to not be distracted by it. So thank you for what you said. Lorna, how are you this morning?
Thank you. My meditation just at the moment is probably not as deep as it has been at other times. I usually meditate at home with the Insight Timer. I don't use callbacks, you know, there's a bell at the beginning and I set it for 25 minutes and there's a bell at the end, and that's my meditation on my cushion. But when I'm a little bit struggling with stress or I'm a little bit more, you know, difficult to meditating, I go back to your recording and use your 20-minute recording with the callbacks. So I have sort of a couple of methods of meditating. Maybe I should include as well neither of those things, you know, just to sit and meditate. Maybe I should do some of those, but just in that. habit of losing one or the other. As far as practice is going, it's probably going, in a sense, quite well, because I find that when I am under a stressful situation, I used to find that when I was very stressed, it seemed to run into being overwhelmed at the same time, and that was how my stress would show itself to me, if you know what I mean. I would feel overwhelmed, and one would run into the other. I don't know where the stress starts and the overwhelming finishes, you know, but those two sort of, it were interlinked when I was stressed before. Now not so much, you know, now I just feel stressed. But I don't get that second wave of being overwhelmed. And I'm more concentrated to work through whatever's the problem at the time or the difficulty at the time, whatever needs to be worked through in my life. So I think that's the whole practice working for me in a positive way in that sense. And then a funny thing happened. I kind of even scared myself. You know, sometimes you can scare yourself at your own thoughts. I overheard, this wasn't said to me, but in the company that I was with, just somebody said, a lady said to another lady, "What's new?" Meaning just to sort of start a conversation, you know, what's new, what's going on in life, and that sort of, she used that expression, "What's new?" And in my mind, sprang one word, everything.
That's right.
Everything is new. And I was like, oh my goodness, you know, how my mind is changing. Yeah. And I really was taken aback at the positiveness and the instantness that word came to mind. Everything. Everything is new. Everything is new every moment. Everything is new. And that was, I kind of went, wow, you know, to myself. So that was something that was, little bits of positive insights that I have in my own life and my own thinking, and forever thinking about, and my mind gets on the stories, here we go again, come back to your breath, come back to the present, or my mind's in the past, come back to the present. That's just an ongoing task, that's what happened this week.
Thank you. What you're all describing is a fruitful Dhamma practice. It's well focused. We're all developing what the Buddha taught, and we're reaping the benefits. Ahepasika, we have come and we've seen for ourselves that this really works. It really develops, and nearly immediately, you know, we start feeling the effects. But it really develops what he was teaching, to develop a calm and peaceful mind in the midst of dukkha. Dukkha occurs. It's always going to. It's not an escape from the world. It's about being deeply and mindfully, fully immersed in our own lives. And to me, that's the most remarkable thing. That's a true refuge. And when you take that to its obvious conclusion, what we're doing is taking refuge entirely in our lives. This is it. You know, this is the point of the Dhamma, to be here and be present while it's occurring. It's remarkable. So, any other questions or comments? If I remember,
I just say that when you said in the piece that the night and the day there's no movement in your mind. I know you sit in that cushion and you say remarkable things about the Dhamma and the Buddha. That was just another remarkable. I mean, just have that aim for that remarkable mind, where you have no disturbance between night and day. I mean, it's a magic moment to think. Just to think of it, it's kind of like magic. I mean, I haven't got that mind. My mind's reactive, but to think you could do that, just to think it.
Yeah.
That it's possible to do that. Just like, geez. So I just want to say this.
Yeah.
A remarkable thing. What you just taught is remarkable. The whole thing is just remarkable. I know you've taught it many times, but it is. What you teach is remarkable.
It is. I agree. It is. It's remarkable, and it's extraordinarily ordinary. That's the whole point. Just to be in our lives without reacting. And it's continuous. It's the true application of emptiness, to be empty of craving and clinging. You know, what he taught. I was going to say, if I remember, and I hope I do, my concentration is getting a little better. I'll teach the jhanas next week. There's an article on the website, and we'll go over it again next week. It's an important teaching because it's misapplied. It really is, to me, it's the essence of wrong speech to represent the Buddhist teachings. I know sometimes I must sound like I'm on a soapbox, but in a way that makes it seem like it's unattainable to ordinary human beings. But that's exactly the point. Any of us can develop this if we want to. That's what the Buddha seriously considered before he started teaching. Can I teach this in a way that's useful to human beings? And the thought occurred to him that even if it's just a few people that have a speck of dust in their eyes, which means even if it's just a few people that can understand this, then I should teach it. And they developed the Eightfold Path. And of course, there's more than just a few people with that speck of dust in their eyes, isn't there? And again, here goes another talk. You ready? Even the idea that it's just a little speck of dust in our eyes that keeps us from developing understanding is an important understanding. We're not that far, no matter where we are as human beings, we're not that far from understanding. We're not that far from developing. We just have a little speck of dust in our eyes, and it's gone. Thank you for a great class. We'll finish with the Metta Sutta, as we almost always do. So find your relaxed meditative posture and gently close your eyes and gently close your mouth. And take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your body and let that mindfulness of your breath cease any distracting thoughts to the past or to the future or that may have arisen from our talk today. And metta is both an aspiration for those of us developing the Eightfold Path and an ongoing expression of a fully awakened, fully mature human being. And these are the Buddha's words on metta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none, through anger or ill will, wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class. Peace. Thank you for listening. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for guided meditations and instruction and Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos. We rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Please feel free to contact me through crossrivermeditation.com. Peace.